Good afternoon. You're listening to Around the Block, a community news program from the Block by Block team at WPPMLP 106.5 FM. On this program, we explore issues in the Philadelphia region with voices from the community, with reports from our team of community journalists and live in-studio interviews. I'm Jennifer Robnett.
And I'm Maurice Waters.
The weather this spring so far has matched the gloomy political climate. I think it's fair to say we all crave a sunnier or more solar state of Pennsylvania. And this is exactly what State Representative Elizabeth Fielder hopes to accomplish with a new grant program called Solar for Schools, which helps fund solar panel installations in Pennsylvania schools. She sponsored legislation that was signed into law last year, and during its first year, the program was awarded more than $22 million in grants for solar installations at schools across the state. Earlier this month, Representative Fiedler, and other officials held a press conference at the Community College of Philadelphia, one of the schools that has received grants. Block by Block, Sultan Smalley brings us this report.
Hi, everybody. I'm State Rep Elizabeth Fiedler. I'm so excited to be here today to talk about one of my favorite topics, solar for schools. All right, it's at the top of the list. This is hopefully just the very first round of grants that we will get to award.
Hello, Representative Elizabeth Fiedler. Can you explain to me why we're here today?
We're here at the Community College of Philadelphia. We've received two Solar for Schools grants, one for the main campus right here where we are standing at 17th and Spring Garden, and one for the Northeast Center. And this grant money is state dollars, so it's taxpayer dollars at the state level, and CCP will use this money to install solar panels here at the campus and then be able to save tons of money that they can reinvest in students' education.
Why is it important for us to have a grant like this?
It's really important. One, it's a sign that government, especially on the state level, can actually work. We can bring taxpayer dollars back to Philly and invest them in really important things like education and workforce development. It's also really important because budgets are really tight. Energy prices are really high, and in many cases for good reason. We are using too much energy, and we haven't worked hard enough to invest in things like renewable energy. So that includes solar, but also wind, geothermal, all sorts of stuff that if we really worked as hard as we can to invest in it, we could be generating a lot more energy and doing it in a clean and efficient and safe way for our environment and our communities. So energy prices are rising. That means bills are going up. And CCP, just like all sorts of schools and just regular people across the state, needs to find a way to be able to balance their budget and pay those bills. And solar panels will help because we'll be able to generate power right here at CCP and not have to pay as high prices.
Are there any other schools getting this funding?
There are. So we've got a grant that we awarded to CCP main campus, also have a check for the Northeast branch, and then four schools in the Philadelphia School District will also be receiving Solar for Schools grants. And this is just the first round. This is like a pilot year. So this is $25 million that we have in the state budget for the very first year that we're awarding the grants now. And then hopefully in the next couple of weeks, as we finish the new state budget, we'll be able to do $25 million more, and we can do more grants for more schools across Philly and across the whole state.
So what can students do to sort of help you advocate for policies like these?
That's a great question. I would say contact your state representative, contact your state senator, contact your city council person, whether it's going for a lobbying visit or calling or emailing or social media. Like, it really does matter. I know it's easy to feel like maybe nobody even read the email that I sent. Did it make any difference that I took like 15 minutes out of my day to do that? It does. It absolutely does. I receive all the communication in my district. I know my colleagues do as well, and we take it really seriously. So whether it's solar for schools or another policy that you really care about or an idea you have, definitely speak up. Take it right to your lawmaker. They're there because they got elected into office, and they're accountable ultimately to the voters. So, yeah, speak up, and I think we've got a great future ahead of us, but really only if everybody, like, pushes the envelope for us to invest in renewable energy.
Why is it important for us to pass policies like these to address the climate crisis, and what other steps do you think?
Solar for Schools is really the first piece of, like, really monumental environmental and pro-labor legislation we passed in Harrisburg in a really long time. And I'm super proud of the stakeholder coalition that we built of environmental education, labor, advocacy groups, faith groups. Bringing people together like that who share a vision and a commitment to something, I think once we do that and real organizing, there's nothing that can stand in our way. It's super easy to feel just really frustrated by politics and feel like government is not working and doesn't have our best interest in mind. And sometimes it doesn't. So I'd say, like, we have to organize, and this is a good example of what we can accomplish when we do that. And we can have really big environmental wins in a bipartisan way. D's and R's voted for this. You heard in the House of Representatives, we only hold a majority by one seat. And this legislation passed really strong bipartisan support in the House and the Senate. So we were able to build up support. So that means hopefully not just solar for schools, but even more. You know, there's the possibility of doing even more really cool, very important stuff on the labor front, on the environmental front. And I really hope this is just the beginning.
What a lovely story. That's good. Solar stuff. That's good. All right. So this is normally the part of the program where we go over current events. And we had a list of things that we were going to cover, but the news cycle, so this was like a week ago, but the news cycle is so fast these days. I didn't even want to try and write this part until the last minute because, like, what seems interesting and relevant and important one day feels like it occurred 500 years ago the next. So we're going to begin with the No Kings protest, the No Kings Day protest. So this all began because the Trump administration was ramping up immigration raids around the country and announced that there were going to be 5 ICE tactical units deployed to sanctuary cities, including Philadelphia. So these units, which are going to be used to assist with the enforcement efforts, so like the raids that they've been conducting on schools, places of worship, private homes, you know, all of this terrible footage we've been seeing of people being separated from their families, you know, detained without due process, in violation of their civil liberties. Reese, did you attend?
No, I was actually out of town. However, when I came back to Philly that evening, I made sure to watch the news to get an update on what happened and how things happened. I made sure I looked at some of the mainstream media, the local news channels, and of course, there's some people that I follow on Instagram to kind of get a mix of information.
Nice.
Yeah.
So we both were in attendance. I couldn't attend because I actually tore my calf muscle. I turned 30. Yeah, I turned 37 on the 5th.
Right, and I turned 55 on Wednesday. So happy birthday to us! Yay!
Happy birthday, Gemini's in the building.
Yes.
But yeah, I followed along actually. So I did similar to you. I looked at some like traditional news outlets, but then I was also following along with some of my favorite Philadelphia-based voices, specifically. There is a woman, her name is Dr. Michelle Taylor. She also goes by Feminista Jones. And she was doing a live YouTube stream. And so she was streaming, she was following along with the military parade in DC and then also with the protest. Feminista Jones, she has many titles. She is a Renaissance woman. And I don't want to risk like... She does many things. I don't want to misidentify or misrepresent her, but just trust me and Google her. She is brilliant. And then there's several other people I like to follow. I like there's a guy named Pearlmania, Alex Pearlman. Always love Ernest Owens, Conrad Benner. There's a bunch of people. But I don't know. Do you have any people on social media that you like to follow?
Yeah. I know you mentioned some local ones, so there's one particular one that I like that's national, Aaron Parnas. He's an independent reporter and attorney, and I like him because he's factual and is short and to the point. And he's very frequent with the information that comes up about a law being passed or something being denied. And he will also actually mention about the legal ramifications. So then for me, I like to digest and kind of interpret myself as opposed to hearing other opinions. So I feel like he's factual. And, you know, it's kind of ironic how I think now that, yes, we are definitely in the information age, but I've come to rely a lot more on Instagram than I have than on local reporters and main reporters.
Yes.
I find it to be more factual, quicker, and unbiased.
Yes.
So that's been my experience. What about you?
No, I totally agree. That's where you're usually on social media. That's where you can get like a real sense of what's going on. I know that like many people had been worried that violence was going to break out at the No Kings protest. And that actually, that's still like an ongoing concern. Even today, there was still a possibility because after the No Kings protest, there was people that gathered at one of the ICE detention facilities in Old City. I think it's like at 8th and Arch. You know, there's a concern because this is on the heels of the Trump administration's like hyper-militarized response to the anti-ICE protests in L.A. Mm-hmm. So I was really going onto social media to check and see like what the police response was.
Yeah, definitely. And for me, I thought this was successful in the fact that, and you know, I don't know 100%, but it sounds like people were not hurt. Can you have a protest without violence occurring? Doesn't always have to happen that way. Sometimes violence is necessary. But it is just good to see that the citizens of the city were able to get together and congregate, express how they were feeling, and not have to clash with the police. And it appeared that, you know, the politicians in the city and the police officers were accommodating to the situation. So for that, you know, I am happy about that. I was able to come back to Philadelphia and not see things, you know, destroyed or attacked or anything hurt. So I am happy about that and hoping that people take that momentum and do more with it. Only time will tell.
Yeah. Yeah, people were really worried. I remember that there was a Philly Mag article that was published, I think it was like 5 days ago, and it was like this big splash title, like Philly could look like LA in 2 weeks. And there actually was a protest last week where there was an Inquirer reporter. They captured footage of a police officer that had his knee on a protester's neck. So, like, this one was very, this protest, or whatever you want to call it, march, was relatively calm. But there have been incidents in recent weeks where there was, like, more, mm-hmm. you know, what I guess you could call brutality, or something more reminiscent of what we saw, like, in 2020 with George Floyd. I think that was the thing that everyone was really trying to avoid, was something like that.
Yeah.
Because that was really, in Philadelphia, was really, really bad.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the thing about it is right now in the city, you know, we're entering a season or the summertime where we're having a lot more festivals. We're having a lot more outdoor events. Just today, we're celebrating the Army's 250th anniversary here in the city as well.
Yes.
So,
yes.
You know, we have people are out there in the streets in the city. Some just want to have fun. Some have, you know, something that they want to say. And everybody should be able, in theory, to say and do what they want to do without feeling harmed or threatened. And, you know, that's part of what we have the rights to do. So I'm hoping that, you know, this is a step in the right direction. I think we're only at the beginning of protests and marching.
Yes.
You know, and I think that this was encouraging for people that I think people want to say things. They just don't know what, how yet. I think the first step one is everybody knows you kind of come out and you protest. Now, what do you do from that point? Do you boycott? Do you vote? Do you, you know, where do we go from here?
Guidance.
So something should come out of that, hopefully, that will move us into the right direction. And hopefully those people at top, that they're talking about wake up and see that they're not matching what the people want.
No, absolutely. Yeah, it was interesting. So, like I said before, I was following along with the march with Feminista Jones, and she was talking about how, like, what took place yesterday was more of like an event. You know, like there were like porta potties and stuff. There was like a sound check going on, and that it wasn't like a true protest. And she was also pointing out that the majority of the participants were white. You know, Philadelphia's majority black city, I think it's like 40% of the population. And I really appreciated that as a white person, just to like be able to meditate on that, like why that might be and what like disagreement there might be between like the organizers of this protest and then like the longtime activist communities, the people who have been doing this for a long time, like, you know, just the difference in tactics and points of view.
What do you think is, you know, it may be an influence on that?
So I think one of the things she was pointing out was that, you know, this was, it actually did, and it's true, it reminded me almost of, like, the Eagles parade, in a way. It had, like, that same flavor of, like, a tailgate, a celebration, majority white people out on the streets. And it's like, you can get so many people. The estimates, I think, were 100,000 people showed up yesterday. And if you can get that many people, you know, and they all, and so the march ended at the art museum.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If you could just get those people, all that huge mass of people, to turn around and march to the ICE detention center instead and, you know, demand, because that's what L.A., that's how the L.A. stuff started, was they went to the detention center and they were demanding that people be released. They were mad because, you know, in L.A. they had gone to like a Home Depot and they were just like shoving people into vans and just taking them away without due process. So it's just like, when you have that much, that many people doing that much, why don't you just like go straight to the source of everyone's frustration? Mm-hmm. But then that begs another question. What is the source of frustration? Is it Trump, or is it Trump's administration violating all of these democratic norms? And
I think it goes back to the organizers of this event. I think that
indivisible. It was indivisible, right?
Indivisible, yeah. And I have to wonder, when they planned this, was this before what happened in L.A.?
Yeah.
Because if it was, then they may not have thought about that. You know, they're focused on saying something about Trump making a commentary about his birthday and him not being a dictator versus the ICE issues that occurred on L.A., where it would have been very poignant for them, like you said, to duplicate what was happening in L.A. and go right down there to that headquarters and say, in Philly, we're not going to tolerate that. So I just have to wonder, you know, what was going on when they organized it originally.
Yeah, the timeline.
Right, the timeline.
That's a good point.
And the mission. And, you know, again, like I say, I feel like people don't have guidance right now. We're getting hit with so many things on so many levels. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, we still haven't really tackled abortion yet, you know, let alone talk about women's rights to vote, talk about civil rights, talk about employment, education. We're getting hit on all levels. And at the same time, you still have to work, you still have to take care of your kids, your health. You're getting inundated, you're bombarded with this stuff, and people just don't know what to do. This is a time for leadership. This is a time where people are definitely supposed to rise, like you said. That idea is a golden idea that, you know, unfortunately, we missed that. But hopefully that'll happen next time. I mean, we definitely, there will be next time, because Philadelphia is a sanctuary city.
Yes, and not a welcoming, I mean, it is a welcoming city.
A welcoming city, okay.
But it is a sanctuary city.
Okay. Yes. So we know, so we're on the road to be in a clash with the administration and with ICE. So it's going to happen. So now the idea is out there. Hopefully people think about that, or let's be proactive. You know, let's say, okay, we are that type of city and we don't want that to happen to our people here. Mm-hmm. What can we do? How can we send a message now? Not wait for them to do things. Let's be proactive. Let's make the people feel comfortable and safe. These people, you know, okay, some may be here wrong and legally, whatever, but most people just want to live a good life, live a better life. You move and you do things to improve your life, right? So let's see what we can do.
I do actually, I want to speak on that difference between welcoming city and sanctuary city, mm-hmm. Because there are some city officials that have begun referring to Philadelphia as a welcoming city, and that there's a lot of people calling. So it was cool. On Thursday, there were several faith leaders. They hosted a service and held a press conference at Arch Street United Methodist Church. And, you know, they were calling recent events, like everything going on, it's proof of the rupture of our country's moral fabric. So, you know, and then it turned into they're really just pleading you know, to city officials, like to denounce ICE, and they want to reaffirm our status as a sanctuary city. The lead pastor is this man named Robin Heineke. He addressed the community, and I really love this. He said, "May our rage be righteous, may our love be fierce, and our courage like justice roll down like water." And I love that because your last name is Waters.
Yeah. I know. I wish I would have said that.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's what we're talking about. People, now's the time to kind of rise above yourself and, you know, care and work with other individuals. People who heretofore haven't had a voice to speak. And, you know, we're in a mental health awareness month.
Yeah.
And this has to be impacting everybody mentally.
Yes.
With what's going on. I can't imagine, you know, feeling like at any moment I'm going to be seized on my wife or my child, or, you know, I'm in school, I'm in church, and these guys come in mask. I don't know who they are. I can't call anybody.
Yes.
You know, and the next thing you know, you're going out of the country back to where you just struggled to try to get away from for a better life.
Or not even to your country of origin. Like, they have all of these, like, you know,
right.
Legal, like, what's the country? I forget what it is.
El Salvador, I think.
Yeah,
right.
Like, not. So yeah. I know that's your, that's a subject of particular interest for you, is men's mm-hmm. mental health awareness.
Mm-hmm.
Now, like, you know, what you were saying before, this kind of news cycle, this really fast, intense news cycle, just acknowledging, like, the effect it has on mental health. Do you have any tips or techniques as to how you practice self-care amidst mm-hmm. all this chaos?
Mm-hmm. Yes. So I've begun to limit when I interact with news media and on Instagram at the same time. I started, you know, of course you're dealing with algorithms on Instagram, and what I've started to do mm-hmm. is started rejecting and saying I'm not interested, to kind of pare it down. And then there are certain pages that I go to and I listen to, and those are the ones I deal with. When I get that information, I'm vetting it. I don't never just accept what comes in front of me, whether it's my favorite guy or not. I'm always going to question, consider, and do my best not to have a knee-jerk reaction to what I'm seeing and what I'm hearing. We have to stop doing that. We have to stop operating out of fear, because that's when you start making mistakes, and that's when you go down the path that they want you to do. So not easy, not an easy thing. And then the other part of it is you also have to emphasize the positive. Too.
Yes, you have to have fun.
Right. You have to have fun. You have to enjoy some of the victories, big or small. We still are in a country where we still have the right to do certain things, and we have to continue that. You know, that's basic for me.
I mean, this has been this is the month really where a lot of stuff is kicked off. So this is like event season.
Mm-hmm.
Pride Month kicked off on June 1st. We have outdoor concert season underway. It's the start of the month. We had West Philly Porch Fest. We had the Roots Picnic. And, I mean, that's the Roots Picnic is beloved. But this year, some people were calling it, I feel bad because we want to be positive, but people were calling it Philadelphia's own Fire Festival. Mm-hmm. I think you know that reference,
yes.
The Fire Festival.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, some well-publicized reports, muddy, crowded, cold, and unsafe conditions for concert goers. So yeah, we want to have fun, but it begs the question, is Philadelphia really ready to protect the citizens that are out trying to enjoy these things?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that. And that's definitely something I thought about too when I heard that. And, you know, for that Ruth's picnic, and they're smart. They're concerned about their people. So I think they should take this as a point of they're growing and expanding and maybe looking at a different venue.
Yeah, the Mann Center.
Yeah, Mann Center is not something that I think is built for the type of, the amount of people that come.
Yes.
That massive amount, even though it's outside and there's no chairs and all that, and it's a beautiful scene, but...
Yeah, it's counterintuitive. You think it would be the place for it, but like I can speak to it because I used to work there.
Mm,
okay. I worked for the Mann.
With two ends.
No. Yeah, with two ends. But I saw it firsthand when I was working there. They did a big screening of Black Panther. And it was like this crazy thing where like a bunch of people just like called out in the kitchen staff. So they had a bunch of bartenders. Like I was a bartender and they were like throwing us into like a cook slash waiting tables slash like... They had us doing all sorts of things that like weren't in the job description. And it was a similar thing where there was rain and just saw up close like how disorganized it was. And they just need to bring it back to the pier, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Or somewhere
It was Penn's Landing. Yeah.
Penn's Landing. I don't even know if Penn's Landing's big enough. I think they should probably do it in South Philadelphia. At the Xfinity Mobile Center, maybe, something where, you have lots of open space, you have lots of parking. It's very easy to get to by transportation, whether car or public transportation.
Yes.
You can kind of move in and out. And everybody in the city knows, when you go to an event, you go down there and do that. I don't know what costs are and things like that, but I think logistically, that's a great place to have something like that. They're growing, and they definitely need to anticipate something like that. I mean, I look at the Essence Festival that happens in New Orleans every year, and I went to that, and I would say that's kind of equating. They have the sound stages, separate sound stages and whatever, and they're able to handle it, but they're having it in the stadium there in New Orleans. So it's already a venue that's kind of built to handle that big crowd like that. So.
Mm. I love New Orleans.
Yeah, me too. The food.
Maybe that's the answer. We just need to get out of the city to escape Philadelphia.
Yeah, let's go. Let's get on the plane.
It's a brief vacation. It's our birthday. We deserve it. We need a birthday trip.
Absolutely.
All right. Oh, geez. The time is flying by. It's 2:28. Okay, here we go.
Thank you to Crystal Herrera, who is our board operator for this episode.
Brad Linder is Radio News Managing Editor at WPPM. Peter Liu is Radio Operations Manager. And Allison Durham is WPPM's Radio Program Manager. I'm Jennifer Robnett.
And I'm Maurice Waters. We'll be back next month with another episode featuring more stories and conversations from our team of Philadelphia community journalists. And you find more episodes of Block by Block on PhillyCam's SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever else you find your podcasts.
Thanks for listening, and happy anniversary, Mom and Dad. 45 years.